All good.
Okay, everybody, we are live. And let me just tell you that if you've been following us, we haven't done a podcast since May. We took a mental health break because it's needed, and I'm not ashamed to say it. We just needed to take a break from social media and from all the things. And I was actually not going to start until, well, I was supposed to start in September. And then it just got pushed, and now it wasn't going to be till January. But when Teresa Carpenter submitted a form, I was like, you know what? We're going to do it. We're just going to start because I felt like it was time. And if you are working on something, on a passion project or whatever it is, and you have it in your gut that, you know what, it's time, then you go for it. So I'm starting early or late, however you want to see it. But I've been, so I'm excited. I am excited. I'm going to say that quite a few times because that's just my word. I've been following Teresa Carpenter on LinkedIn for a while, and she's just very, very authentic. And I've said this before, you need to surround yourself by like-hearted and like-minded people that are authentic, that'll bring you positivity into your life. And so watching Teresa on LinkedIn and her career and everything that she does is just that. So I want to bring on Teresa. Thank you so much for being on here. Thank you for that form submission, because I don't think I'd be doing this right now. But please tell us what you do.
Well, thank you so much, Annette. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for following up with the form submission. I saw a lot of your work online and listened to a couple of your podcasts, and I was very interested in wanting to be a guest. So thank you so much. My name is Teresa Carpenter. I am an active duty naval officer. I do public affairs. I've been in for 25 this April to be 26 years. Started off my career as an enlisted aviation electrician's mate in the Navy, and then I transferred to the surface warfare community. And then in 2009, 2010, I became a Navy public affairs officer, and that is what I've been doing ever since. And then in my spare time, I'm a writer, I am a podcaster, I'm very active on social media, and I just like to tell stories and share my life and my journey with others in the hope that it will inspire others at the same time and inspire myself. Sometimes it's just as much for me as it is for everyone else.
That's so amazing. I commend you for your 25 years because that is a long time to give yourself to something, but I could tell that you are passionate about it, that you love it. But
I do.
why did you decide to join the Navy?
So I'm originally from Columbus, Ohio, and I was 19 years old. And at that time, I'd been on my own. I moved out of my parents' house the summer I turned 17. And so for about 2.5 years, I drifted aimlessly from dead-end job to dead-end job. I worked busing tables. I worked at Victoria's Secret Catalog because we've got Les Wexner and the Limited in Columbus. I worked hosting. I was a hostess at a restaurant. And I watched as all my friends started going to college. I grew up in the Catholic school system. So most of my friends went on to school, and I was sort of left behind. And all I really had was partying and, going out to bars. And I was getting in with the wrong crowds and just really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was very unhappy. And I had a couple friends who talked me into joining the Navy. They thought it would give me a sense of purpose and a sense of direction. And it certainly did do that. There's been a lot of trials and tribulations, as there is with anybody as they navigate the world and become an adult, but it was the best thing that could have happened to me. And so thankful that I happened to know people in a town that is not that familiar with military service, one who had served in the Marine Reserves and one who, to this day, I mean, the guy was like a stoner. He was just didn't work, nothing. But he was wise in his own way, and he said, "This, I think this would be a good idea for you." And so I listened to them, and the rest is history.
Did you ever think that would be a career that you would be in this long?
No. Even when I joined, it was to I was also deep in debt. I'd taken out a student loan for community college. Wasn't responsible with my money. I had applied for a JCPenney credit card, and I racked that up with furniture bills. And so I thought, okay, I'm in deep in debt. and I'm holding down like two or three jobs that I absolutely hate. And I figured I would just pay off my debts and use the GI Bill and then get out and then figure out what I wanted to do next. I didn't know if I wanted to maybe become a social worker, because I'd always been somebody who had has a deep heart and very empathetic, but I didn't know what my skills were enough. And so the military just provided me a path to navigate into a career that was more aligned with my personality.
I think that's so amazing. It's so hard. We joined. Some of us think I'm going to stay in 20 years. And some of us like me was, said 3 years and I'm done.
Right.
And then 17 years later, you're like, how did that happen? And where did the time go?
Absolutely.
So it's amazing. So you're very transparent on LinkedIn and you talk about real stuff, the hard truths. How was that? Were you always like that? Or when did that start happening? Because I know in the military, there's that stigma. I think anywhere mm-hmm. there's a stigma, but it's very difficult to be so open and honest about it because we're afraid of the backlash.
So Annette, I was always like this and I got a lot of bullying for it, but I never changed who I was. So even in my junior enlisted days, anybody who's ever worked with me will have a story for you about somebody who basically shit on me in some way. And I'm saying I played the victim as well and would obsess over it and cry over it. But I never changed who I was because I just don't believe in trying to be something that I'm not. It just doesn't feel natural and it doesn't feel right. But at an early stage, I just had to fight the system to be who I was. And as I got older, it became easier because I started to become very strategic about what jobs I would choose and what environments I would allow myself to be in. And that has helped tremendously. And then I also learned how to stand up to bullying and being able to see the telltale signs of toxic leadership or bullying before it becomes this terrible problem is learning how to navigate within a staff, learning how to work with people that you don't like. But I say more junior enlisted, I had my fair share of what I call the haters, and people who just thought that I was weird and quirky and different. 'Cause I'm all those things. But my message to people is that you can be the way that I am and still thrive in the Navy. It might be a little harder, and being the person that always speaks up and speaks out is not necessarily the easiest path, but because I feel like that's my calling is to be a change agent and to be an advocate, whether it be getting my dog into England with cropped ears and dog tails, or it be something super major like helping stamp out sexual assault in the military. I feel that it's our duty as citizens to use our freedom of speech, especially in a time right now where I feel like our freedom of speech is being slowly eradicated away and everything's becoming so political. It's really important to, and I think I have it right here, a pocket thing of it. It's very important to keep in mind that the Constitution, we have a First Amendment and that we use that to peacefully and respectfully speak up and speak out.
That is so amazing. And I wish I would have known someone like you years ago, because there's, you know, you have mentors, you have leadership, but they're not always in the way that you need them to be, right? So did you have mentors or leadership that believed in you, like that helped you continue to use your voice?
I did. They always thought that I was going a little bit out of the bounds, and they always would warn me that Teresa, you're getting a little too controversial. You're stepping a little outside your lane. And you know, I had to humble myself sometimes and say, okay, I am just the ensign in the room, or I am just the E5, and some of these people know more than I do. They're wiser than myself. It was when I would just see something that was just categorically wrong. And then how do you speak up and speak out, and how do you endure, an environment that's just not healthy? And I always found a way, to navigate those work environments. I just find that one thing that I was really good at, or one thing that me and the team could work on. And I just tried my best not to let the overarching poor environment get to me. And I've had some amazing leaders as well. Don't get me wrong. I've had some great work environments, some awesome teams. I'm a 50-50 kind of person. There's been about maybe half my environments haven't been so great, and then the other half have been amazing. And so I just tried my best to, like a lot of leaders, I learned from the good ones, and I hoped not to repeat the mistakes of the ones who were not so healthy. But no, I don't think that I've ever met somebody who goes outside the lines in terms of the military and is still active duty, especially in terms of free speech, as I do. We do have some in the academic lane. Brian Berg, he comes to mind, a few others that write for like Naval Proceedings and some other, but they're mostly talking about the geopolitical strategic decisions. I don't know if there's anybody else out there like me that's as outspoken about mental health and other things who's still serving in uniform and who is as senior as myself.
And that's, I think that's one of the most amazing things about you is being a senior leader talking about that. And I didn't come across that until about, 6 years ago when I came across an article from my former division commander who started talking about mental health. He was in an article in Politico magazine, and I read it and I was like, oh my God, sir, like, thank you for doing, right. Thank you for saying something, even if you're out now. Because, you know, I, for whatever reason, he didn't talk about it before. Well, probably because he was a general, but we need more leadership to say, look, it's okay to not be okay. Absolutely. And it's okay to ask for help. And so that's why we need people like you who are role models for both genders and to let them know there's nothing wrong. You're still a good person. Right. You're still a good leader. Right. And so what do you, have you had soldiers come up to you and talk to you about that? And what do you tell them?
Well, I have a lot of them who compliment me on my social media presence. I'm going to have some influencers at the end of January who are really, really active on Instagram, but their work is not being seen by some of the more senior leaders. And hopefully I can bring that to LinkedIn, because they are very outspoken about their struggles in the military and about mental health. And so a lot of them will write me and just say, seeing your active duty, seeing your active social media presence, it gives me permission to share my story. And I've had, very close friends of mine who are now looking at starting blogs or looking at being more outspoken about their struggles and their trauma because I'm so outspoken. And I'll be honest with you, Annette, I still haven't scratched the surface of things in my real early childhood. And I don't know if I ever will at this point. But I think that I share as much as I can with where I'm at with my healing and my journey, because I know that if I do it, it gives other people the courage and the permission that they can do it too. They can still keep their job. They can still promote. I've done all those things, and I've been blogging since 2014 this way. So I started doing this on Facebook, and I would write these very long blogs about boundaries or about dating or, anything that was going on. And I found that by sharing those stories, they would resonate with people. And so all I really did was take that concept and bring it over to LinkedIn.
Did you receive any backlash from your peers?
I have... Well, when I was in Indo-PACOM, I used to do pet store protests, and I had a pet store owner send a letter to Indo-PACOM saying that he was ashamed that somebody in the Navy would basically disparage a business. And he said that I was mentioning his business by name on Facebook, which I never was. And at the time, I was a very junior lieutenant. And so my command ordered me to stop the blog I had about puppy mills and also to stop my social media page. It was called Hawaii Military Pets. And I didn't fight it at the time because I was so junior and I didn't know that I wasn't doing anything wrong, really. And I wasn't lying about this guy's business, or I wasn't even mentioning him by name. What happened is I allowed myself to get into a back and forth with him on a social media posting. And you can never do that with a troll. And what would happen is people would agree with me because I would just bring up all the facts about commercial breeding and about how responsible breeders don't sell to pet stores and this and that. But it didn't get me anywhere. All it did was get me in hot water with my boss. So I, at this point, I don't engage with trolls. I don't engage with the people like, but that taught me a lot. I mean, even though I had to, for the time being, I was moving anyway out of Hawaii. So it wasn't that big of a deal. It was a good lesson learned to understand how to do this properly and still keep my job. And so even when I got to San Diego, I didn't stop doing puppy mill protests. I just stopped being interviewed on camera as Teresa Carpenter, who's all, you know, who everyone knows is happens to be an active duty naval officer. And so nothing really changed to my advocacy. I just got smarter about it.
And then, I love that you said that because I did engage with a troll once because you just get so heated and so passionate. And you just want,
right.
You want to say all the things. And then later on, you're like, oh man, I probably shouldn't have.
And I mean, I've always had this, like, I have a gift for being able to forgive people who are mean to me. Like mm-hmm. I've had a lot of bullies throughout my life, but I'll tell you that every single one of those bullies I'm on good terms with. And I don't know how I do that. Most people don't. But I'm able to compartmentalize their destructive ways. And I'm also able to see that it's not them. It's not me. I mean, it is them, but it's their fact that they're unconscious to whatever it is that they're dealing with. And it has nothing to do with me. And so I have this a capacity to be able to see the good in everyone and to embrace that, which is rare. I know a lot of people can't do that. And, that is just something that I'm able to do. And so that has helped me tremendously.
That's so good. I think it's the older I get, the more I'm able to do that now because I just don't have, I think my give a shit factor just was like, okay, I'm too old for this.
Yeah, life is too short to spend your days hating people and being bitter when you can just be happy. And, you know, I find it entertaining. Like sometimes when somebody says something really cruel to me or something mean, as long as I don't have to like work with them every day on a day-to-day basis for hours on end, which I've had to do, I'm usually pretty okay. Like I'm okay with a little side comment or a snide remark or, cause I get those. I absolutely do for being the way that I am. But I feel like that comes with the territory. When you are being effective and having an impact, the haters are going to come. And so I just see that as a badge of honor. Like if you want to hate what I'm doing, go right ahead, because obviously that means that I'm doing something right.
Yes. I love that you said that. It took me years to finally realize that because there's times where I was like, you know what? I give up. I quit. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever just wanted to just...
Yeah. I mean, it's really hurtful the first few times that it happens. Like when I started my podcast, I had some really senior people in the public affairs community, not say anything to me personally, but just with some of the comments that they were making, make it very clear that they didn't approve of a Navy communicator having an off-duty pursuit like this, or what they called being the story. And because we're supposed to just be about telling the story of our sailors. I don't subscribe to that mentality. I think that when we share our story, it empowers others to share their story too. And our story can resonate with them and give them the permission to speak up. But it's just a different way of looking at it. And I get it. So when that happened, I had to really take a step back and assess why I was doing this. And after a while, I just had to go, okay, there's going to be those people who don't understand what I'm doing. They're going to think that it's a signal that I don't want to be a Navy captain. I've been told that too, that I'm signaling somehow to the community that I don't intend to promote, which I've said time and time again, I'm halfway in, halfway out. I'm 50%. Maybe I'll promote, maybe I won't. It all depends on what the jobs are because I'm very particular about what jobs I'll take due to my mental health. And preserving my own mental health because I've had so much trauma in my life and I want to make sure that I don't go somewhere where I'm going to be re-traumatized.
Wow, that is so important. And it's so, that takes a lot of courage to actually to say that. I just took whatever. I mean, I took jobs that would help me in my career, but I don't think I was ever strong enough to actually say that for my mental health.
Yeah. There was a job here, for an example, that I was sort of offered. And I just know that I've already done a lot of jobs like that job. So I knew it wouldn't be challenging. And then I also just knew the way that that job runs on a day-to-day basis. And it just wasn't something that I thought would be healthy for me. And then when I got this offer, hopefully next year, all the medical goes through okay. I get to go to NATO in England. I thought, man, working with European nations, working with other countries. I just know from any time I've ever done exercises and done things with State Department, because State Department is definitely more about diplomacy. And I know that that's kind of a really good fit for me. And so, I know myself well enough to know the kinds of jobs that I'll succeed in. And I think that's what you have to do, whether you're in the Navy or you're not in the Navy, is understand what's going to preserve your mental health, because you can choose a job. And even though the people are great, it's just not a good day-to-day fit for you.
Mm-hmm. That's so important. So for everybody watching, listening, or however you're streaming this, you need to stick up for yourself, because no one else is going to do it for you.
No, they're
not.
I
think that's, we forget that. We just kind of get pushed around because we're afraid to say something. We're afraid that we'll get fired, relieved, we'll lose our clearance, whatever the case is. But we need to advocate for ourselves, because they don't know what they don't know. We only know what we can, how we feel internally. So gosh, that's such a great thing. You need to definitely use your voice. And I think that's why we're both here, right? Is because we're trying to be the voice for the voiceless, per se, to show people that you can stick up for yourself. And so what do you do for yourself, to take care of yourself with all, I mean, you have a successful career, you write, you podcast, you do all these things, but how do you take care of yourself?
I'm a big nerd when it comes to reading and learning, and I'm a lifelong learner. So I'm constantly listening to other podcasts or watching videos on YouTube that rejuvenate me. It's going to sound sad, but like, I'm a huge true crime person. Yes. And I absolutely love police interrogation videos. That's become my new thing lately. And there's this guy called Jim Can't Swim, where he like goes through, you know, clip by clip of the video and how the interrogator asked something the way they did and why. And I find all that human psychology stuff really fascinating. And so that's, I think, the best way that I unwind is, you know, as my husband says, all the weird shit you watch, Teresa, you know, but I love it. It's like, I get really into those kinds of things. I read self-help books, but I was telling my husband the other day, I'm kind of at a point where even when I read a self-help book, I'm sort of just reading it like, oh, well, how I could do this, instead of, I need to learn from this. And that's a huge transformation. And there's still, don't get me wrong, a million people that I can learn from and who are much smarter than myself, especially when it comes to business. But in terms of self-help and knowing yourself and mental health, I have done a lot of work on myself. And so to get to this place is a good place to be. And I feel like it's my duty to give back and to help those people that are coming behind me that don't have what I have.
No, I love that. That's so great. I'm so just amazed by all the things that you're doing, because we don't see that enough in any branch of service. And I think it's needed. It's absolutely needed to continue to help the junior soldiers that come in. You just want to like hug them and say, it's going to be okay.
And they're already all over social media. That's the thing. They might not be on LinkedIn, but they're all over Instagram and they're all over TikTok. And so if we can help guide them to how to tell compelling stories that help others and lift the conversation. I mean, we get it. I do the fun videos as well. I got, my dog's got an Instagram. I have definitely a very quirky and silly side as well as I do a serious side. But I think that if you're going to have a platform and you're going to share your voice, it should be for a purpose. And so there's a few, like I said, the three that I'm going to have on at the end of this month. I really feel like they sort of set the example for really, really smart and savvy social media marketing and social media presence as what we call like an influencer in the military space. And so I really want to showcase them, because a lot of young people can learn from them. I mean, I'm a little bit older and I don't have the presence that they do on social media, and they're just so professional about it. I mean, their stuff is so spot on technically. And so you want to learn from those people. I mean, I can learn from them as well. I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to reels, for an example. And they're like killing it in the space of reels and some of the graphics that they do. So I think we all can learn from everyone. I can learn a lot from the people that come behind me in terms of some of the newer technologies, and hopefully they can learn from me in terms of the way that I handle interactions with others and some of the issues I've had with people and how I've worked past that.
I love that. I'm laughing because my daughter, she's 21. She's on TikTok and she has such a presence that I'm sitting there and I'm like, can you teach me how to turn my stuff into this? I'm constantly learning because she knows how to do it, but there's nothing wrong with trying to learn from the younger generation, but turn it into being helpful with our generation, you know?
Right. So there's
always something to learn. And I think it's funny because I swore I would never go on TikTok and then I did. But for a purpose. I don't do dances. I don't sing. I don't do any of this stuff. But there are people on there that want to be heard. There are people on there that need people like us to bring them in and tell them it's okay. So there's a method to our madness on why we're on Instagram doing reels or TikTok for this. So just go with the flow, guys. Just learn.
Yeah, I can't even tell you how many people come on my big LinkedIn DMs and say that they watched a YouTube video about the Navy public affairs community. I did one with the Navy Sea Cadets about a year and a half ago, and that's great. I mean, I'm if you Google Navy PAO right now, I think I'm the only one whose video comes up. And I hope that one day you Google Navy PAO and 20 videos come up, right? I don't want to be the only one out there talking about public affairs and Navy in the social media space. So I think that's incumbent upon me to set the example and show that you can have a voice, you can have an opinion, you can even take on controversial issues with your personal opinion, as long as you're not being disrespectful and being disparaging towards your leadership. That's where you get yourself into that hot water. As long as your views aren't considered extremist, like you're not inciting violence or a revolution against the government. There are so many ways that you can be an advocate. You can lobby Congress even. I mean, I'm writing Congress now about that dog issue. So you can do all those things. And I think that a lot of people don't think they can, and think that if they're in uniform, they're not allowed to because it's political. And I'm here to say, like, everything can be political. We can call anything political these days. Mm-hmm. So there are ways to do it and stay within the regs and get your voice out there and have your story heard and use your story to help others.
Yes. Yes. On all that, there's always a way to do it. You just have to do it the right way.
Right.
That's absolutely it. You don't have to be crazy. You don't have to be crazy about it, but do it the right way. I love that. So there you go, you guys, that you can do it. Just go ask Teresa how to do it. She will show you how.
And a lot of times it's something that's just really fun. Like, I'll go through my phone and I'll see like a picture of something and it just inspires a story in my mind or a theme. You know, there's certain things that I think I tend to talk about over and over again, just because they're things I've dealt with a lot. So whether that be, like I said, bullying or having the courage to seek mental health treatment or, things with animals. I really do believe like animals are the best reflection of how a society is progressing. So a society that is enlightened and is kinder and gentler and the people are generally, I think, getting along well with one another, tends to treat their animals better and tends to have more awareness. Because if you can't be good to a defenseless creature, and it does run the spectrum from people who are all the way on the vegan side to the people who care just about their cats and dogs. And I get all that, but I think that there's space in our society to have those discussions. And that's something I'm very, very passionate about as well. I'm passionate about leadership, setting the example, accountability. We've been talking a lot in the military lately about accountability. And I think that is a very important conversation to have, because we have seen that sometimes leaders aren't held accountable. And what do we do? What is the next generation of military leaders like myself who are coming up into those senior ranks? How do we hold ourselves accountable? And how do we ensure that there's accountability within the system?
Yes, that's so important. Yeah, that's a whole other episode. I mean, there's so much you could talk about with that.
Right.
It is so important.
It is.
So tell you, so you have your own podcast. So what is it called?
My podcast is called Stories of Service, Ordinary People Who Do Extraordinary Work. And it is about people from all walks of life who show up in service to their respective communities. So I've made it very broad on purpose. I will spotlight any age group, any ethnicity, any gender. I want it to be a conversation about people who have inspired me and whose story will inspire others. And so I just love it. I love diving into people's stories. I love it when someone has a book. I try to I always read their book if they have a book, and try to ask questions that when I watch an interview, I get frustrated that the interviewer didn't ask certain questions and didn't go a little bit deeper into the conversation. And so it's my opportunity for that hour to really dive deep into somebody's why, like what made them do that. And that fascinates me, because when you get to that why, then you go, oh, I see. That makes total sense. I really understand and see that person. And so that's what I try to do, is just basically honor the people who come on my show. And they always become like closer friends afterwards. And so it's just an amazing way to just get to know people.
It is. It's beautiful to be able to interact like that. I mean, especially during these past 2 years, it's been so overwhelming and chaotic. And so why not try to have a conversation and see people's faces and just hear them? You know, people just want to be heard. They want to share their story. And I think that's so great. That's so great.
Yeah. Last night, after my girlfriend Sandy got off the phone with me, she's like, I know I shouldn't be, but I'm so fired up right now. Like, and I get what she's talking about. Like the day that, what was it? I don't remember who I was. I was talking to my friend Tia about the whole dog thing with the England and the cropped ears and the dock tails. And it was like right after that conversation, I had to like go and do a bunch of things about this issue that I probably won't ever fix. But, you know, I get where she's coming from. It's like when you have that conversation and you get heard and you get to share your story, you suddenly feel like empowered. And also when you share your story, you lift the stigma about the issue. It just feels like a weight's been. Did we lose you? Are you still there?
Oh, there we go. I think one of us was frozen. Okay, we're back. Okay. No, I love those conversations. I love those kinds of conversations where you leave and you're just like, oh, I'm motivated to do all these things.
I mean, I'm so motivated. And maybe that only lasts for like maybe an hour, but you know, you're like, oh, this is great. And then, you know, the real world kicks in. But no, it's
okay, because you get the initial thought process in there, and so you'll be motivated for an hour, but maybe later on you get remotivated again because it'll come back, you know. So
right
it's so great.
No, it's wonderful.
And you also blog, so what's the title of that? You have a website?
Mm-hmm. It's called Teresa's Tapestries, and I don't blog very often. I need to write more, I feel like, because usually when I do write, the writings resonate and do quite well. It's just I've been getting a lot more into video lately, more so than writing, but it's something that I really enjoy, and it resonates in a different way than the videos do, or than just a quick post. So I usually just, if I'm feeling inspired about an issue or I'm observing something that seems to be kind of a phenomenon with my work or with life, I have a piece that's publishing in Warhorse in February, where I dive really deep into what started my journey with alcohol abuse. And so I'm really, I'm nervous about that one publishing, but it's time. And I've you know, made sure that I haven't offended anybody in my family. I'm very careful, again, because one of the things that a lot of people, I think, are very nervous about sharing their story and why it's really hard is because you want to make sure that you own your side of the street and you're not blaming other people for things that maybe they did right, maybe they did wrong. And so how do you share your story in a way that doesn't re-traumatize the people around you? Because they have their own perspective and the way and the lens in which they saw a, maybe a conflict. And so you don't want to invite that kind of re-victimization or re-traumatization. And so I have to be very careful and almost like it's like this delicate little thing that I just have to shepherd just the right way. And so if I've got a really, really sensitive piece that's coming out, I'll usually write my family members if they're mentioned. And I'll even offer to sort of reword some of it. And again, a lot of everybody does it this way. But that's what I have found has made it a lot easier to go as deep as I do.
I am so glad you said that. When I wanted to start writing the book, I made sure to reach out to my family and I had to tell them I'm writing the book and this person's going to be in it. Is it okay if I mention your name or I could change it or I could do this, but I wanted to be respectful because I wanted them to know it wasn't their fault.
Right.
But it was time for me as my own self-healing journey to get it out to help other people. So it is, it could be so, such a sensitive topic, whatever we talk about, and to put it out there to the world, you know, you don't want to offend anybody. You don't want them to think that, you know, it's their fault, but we want to do this for ourselves. So that's,
Yeah. There's no roadmap that tells you how to do that. There's no coaching class or self-help group that says, you know, write your memoir without diming anybody out. You know, there's like nobody that teaches you how to do that. And I think that that's sometimes people's trepidation. Number one, they just don't want to look vulnerable, but then again, vulnerability is a strength. And so the more vulnerable you are, and again, sometimes the people are afraid that their job might come after them. And I always think in situations like that too, well, you might be in the wrong job if you have a job that you can't talk about struggles that you've had in the past and how you overcame them. But it is incredibly difficult, especially because you might have had a conflict with somebody in your past, but then now you're at a good place and you don't want anything to upset that relationship. So how do you tell your truth and say how you felt during that period without pushing blame onto that person? It can be very, very challenging.
It is. So your piece is going to come out when again, you said?
In February, mid-February.
I'm excited to read it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's definitely been a journey. I think I've had every addiction there is imaginable that wasn't any kind of hardcore drugs. So, it's a good place to be now to kind of understand the source of addiction and why those kinds of things kept coming up over and over again throughout the years, because healing is not a upward journey. It's more like heal a little and then go back down, heal a little and then go down again and then heal. And then it takes years to get to that place where you feel safe sharing. And I will tell you, like I said, I'll share about my alcohol abuse. I'll share about my DUI. I'll share about things like that, but I still have certain things that are a little bit harder for me to go into. So I think one day I'll probably share all of it. It's just going to take time to get to that place.
Right. It took me a long time to admit that I used to hide alcohol in my coffee before I went to work. And I used to think that my one glass of wine was just a one glass of wine, but my kids told me otherwise. So there's just things that is so hard to admit to or to talk to. So how did you get through all of that? How did you finally say, oh my gosh, there's a problem?
Well, with the alcohol abuse issue, I had got a DUI in 2014 and kept my job in the Navy, and my command gave me a second chance. And so I stopped drinking and driving, but I really didn't stop abusing alcohol. And so it just kept going on and on, because the alcohol I had to get to why I was drinking. Mm-hmm. What was it that was causing me to want that drink when I wanted it. Mm-hmm. And it was because I would always abuse alcohol and drink excessively when I was in groups of people where I didn't feel like I belonged. Mm-hmm. So I've always had a feeling around certain people, especially the military is very competitive. They stack you up against one another. And there are people who could sense that I was very sensitive and in their minds, very weak. And so I a lot of times just didn't feel like I was welcomed or I was a part of the team in certain work groups. And so when we would go out and hang out socially, the only way that I would feel okay is if I was drunk. And as long as I was drunk, I just didn't care what people thought. And that would always get me in trouble, though. I would always either do something or say something that the next day I would regret and I would feel ashamed about. Mm-hmm. And so this went on and off, like most of my career. I would go, you know, sometimes years without doing it or having an incident. And then another incident would happen. Mm-hmm. And it finally culminated in 2000, and this will be in the article, but it culminated during this exercise that I was doing overseas in India at a reception where I just got completely obliterated and blacked out, woke up with puke going down my whites and just was so ashamed. I thought maybe people had seen how I was. Turns out nobody did or even had any clue. But that was when I was like, okay, I don't even know how I got home. I don't even know what I said. I am now a lieutenant commander. I've already had a DUI. I'm going to lose everything. I'd been in 22 years at this point or something, or 20 years. It was in 2017, 18. So it wasn't even that long ago. And at that point, I thought, if I don't get a handle on this, I'm going to lose everything that I've worked my whole career for. And I'd never really addressed what was the source of the drinking. And if you don't address the source of the alcohol or the addiction, then what you do is you might stop that addiction, but then you're going to start another addiction because you're still using something to self-soothe instead of dealing with that icky feeling. So I had to come to terms with the fact that I am that quirky, weird person who doesn't always fit in and isn't always cool. And is, if I can embrace that, and if I can be happy, if I can exude confidence, even though I'm not necessarily the cool kid, then I don't need that alcohol. I don't need, as when I was younger, I don't need that hookup with that guy at mm-hmm. a bar. I don't need all these other vices or success. That was another one. I don't need to have all these quals. Like I was always getting the most qualified person in my work center. I was always, you know, every single thing that I could get in my military record, I would get. I mean, I still kind of am like that. And anytime I can get an extra qualification or something. Also, I'm a lifelong learner and I find it interesting. But at some point, you have to go back and say, what is driving all this? It's this feeling of an inadequacy. It's this low self-esteem. And that's what you have to work on. Because if you don't fix that and work on that, you'll continue to have these issues.
You're so right. And so today, presently, you are, I can't think of the word now.
A commander? You're
sober.
Oh. So that is another thing I had to grapple with is that I'm not, I just don't abuse it. I have a drink. I won't go over one. Mm-hmm. I never drink and drive. And, it's just, once I now understand why I was doing it, I have no relationship between the drink and the triggering feeling. Mm-hmm. If I've got the triggering feeling, it doesn't even occur to me, okay, I need a drink or I need a cigarette or I never smoked, but you know what I mean?
Right.
Now it's just, okay, I've got to breathe. You know, I have other self-soothing mechanisms. When my heart starts to race because something is happening that I can tell mm-hmm. I'm being triggered by someone or something. Mm-hmm. And because I'm still going to have those feelings. And that's what I talk about in the end of the story is that you never lose those triggering feelings. And especially when you've had these feelings and these things that have happened since childhood, I don't think you just wake up and suddenly, life is perfect.
Right.
You just have to recognize that you're in a triggering moment and that person is triggering you or something you read is triggering you. And you have to learn how to step away from it, talk to a trusted friend. Let yourself feel that feeling and mm-hmm. then move past it. But now I just look at it like, I don't even have any desire to want to pick up a drink just because I'm feeling that way. And I don't feel intimidated by people in groups anymore. You mm-hmm. could put me with like the most prominent, famous person or smartest guy in the room or whatever, and I wouldn't even care because I got a husband that's just, nobody phases him. And he's been a real example about that. He doesn't care if you're, you know, the lowest guy on the totem pole or you were the president of the United States. He would treat the president of the United States the same way. And so now, like, people just don't really trigger me like that I don't know, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, no, it does. And I thank you so much for sharing, because I think it's so important for people to know. And I've just learned a lot from you just now. And I now that I have a daughter who's of drinking age, and you know, it's important for us to have those conversations about, why are we drinking? Do we right. have to have that drink? You know, and if are you emotionally drinking because you just got hurt from a breakup, whatever the case is, it's so important to talk about that, because that will, you know, carry on into your life. And so I had to do that too. Like, why was I drinking back then? Why was I hiding the drink? Right. Why did I think I needed that at 9 a.m? And it is just, it was hard, but now I know, I don't need to have 3 glasses. I can just have one and be totally fine, or even half of one or whatever, because I know what it did to me before. So right. yeah, thank you so much.
And I don't want to be controlled by anything. Like right. I want to be empowered, and I don't want to have any kind of advice that I absolutely need in order to function. I don't want that in my life anymore. And so that's part of taking control of your life and yeah. realizing that you are you. Everyone is special and unique and beautiful in their own way and has something to offer. And when you let those things get in your way, you distract from your purpose and what you were meant to do in life. Mm-hmm. And so you are not doing yourself any favors, and you're not being your best self to show up in the lives of others. Right. And so that was the other thing that really motivated me to want to move past this, was I knew that if I continued to wallow in victimhood and all these vices, then I wasn't going to be able to be the person that I want to be.
Right. And I just want to point out to those that are watching, you know, I know it's not easy for everybody. I know many people who are recovering alcoholics who just can't. They cannot right. have that one more drink. And we love you anyway. So, you know, Maxine Kuster says, valid points. Thank you so much for watching. It's definitely not easy. So I wanted to point that out, because not everybody can just say, okay, I can have just one. Maybe you can't have just one.
And I don't advocate this for everyone. Everyone mm-hmm. has what works for them, what doesn't work. This is what's worked for me. If I go over that one, I start to just feel like crap. And there's other reasons I don't like to drink a lot either. And I was just sacrificing those other reasons. So I don't like to drink a lot because it makes me feel tired, and it just messes up my digestive system. There's a lot of health reasons why I don't like to overdrink, mm-hmm. but I would just ignore all that mm-hmm. in favor of getting drunk, because if I was intoxicated, I felt accepted being myself.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, that's probably part of the reason I'm so active on social media, and I've been so active for so many years, is because I have the ability now to build a community around me of people who get the real me. Mm-hmm. I don't have to perform or be anything I'm not, and I'm able to provide value and help others in my own way, and bring in people who support the person that I am, and I haven't always had that support.
Yes, gosh. And I thank you for that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have so many people following you and just learning so much from you, because you are able to give that to us. And, you know, I think now in this generation, we need to be surrounded by people like that. It's so hard out there. It is so hard out there.
Oh, it is. And people are, I mean, everybody walks around with like a big mask, and you know, deployments, I think, are the hardest when you're stressed and you're deployed and everybody's just so short with one another. And it's just, it's very, very tough to break the surface and have what I call deep conversations. I used to love going to those Alcoholics Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, Codependency Anonymous. I loved going to those meetings because it was the only time I would hear deep conversations. Right. I'd go to work and it'd be like, how are you doing? How's the day? Living the dream. It was just stupid, shallow conversations all day long. And I'd be like, oh my God, I'm losing brain cells having all this shallow small talk every day. And then I would go to a meeting and people would be talking about real shit. They'd be talking about their, you know, problems with their husband or problems with, you know, hooking up and just having these useless relationships and drinking and drug use. And so it was just so much more real to me that there were people out there that really struggled with stuff and they were really willing to talk about it. And it wasn't until I got into those rooms that I realized that that was okay to have those conversations.
Well, and social media doesn't help either, right? Because a lot of people are afraid to say what's really going on at home. Everything on social media is just my pretty, you know,
my perfect life.
Exactly. And so that's why I think I'm so adamant, and people have told me that too. You share too much. And I said, but sometimes somebody needs to hear that.
Right.
Like,
oh yeah.
You know, yes,
I hear people's bad days.
Yeah. And hear about, yes, I wrote a book, but do you know what I went through to write that book? It was freaking hard. It still gets me sometimes. It still does it. So even though people think we are successful in their eyes, like famous and all these things, no. It's not like that at all. This is real life right here. And I think that's what we need to show. And especially now with my own kids, I want them to see that, yes, I went through a lot of crap, but this is how I'm trying to overcome it. This is how I'm trying to be the real me, because all those years before I was trying to be somebody else.
Right.
And it's no longer. So yeah, no. The time is now, right? We need Absolutely. To continue to be real.
Yeah. When I have crappy days, I post about them. You know, I got very frustrated talking to that army veterinarian that day who just didn't, and maybe, you know, she really can't do anything about this issue, but I was just so mad and I was okay. You know, I was just frustrated. I said it in a classy way, but I was definitely venting and putting forth a little bit of my frustration with this issue that I'm trying to work through. And you know, when I failed my gun qual, it was like so much anxiety and just this feeling of failure. And it was an opportunity for me to really work through a problem and tell the story and the journey about it every step of the way. And I've never done that. I've never shared like that before. So I think that I'll continue to be like this. I mean, if something great happens, then yeah, I share about that, but I'm not going to always share about the good stuff. There's a lot of things that go on in people's lives that are not so great. And we need those voices out there talking about those things.
Exactly. So what's next for you? I can see so many things happening for you, but what is next for you? What do you want to do?
So I'm continuing with the podcast. I've got 25 episodes, started it last April. And so going to continue on in 2022. In March, I'm taking an improv class. I've always wanted to do improv. So I think that's going to be very interesting because I don't have the best short-term memory. So I always wanted to do theater in college, but I was terrible at memorizing lines. So I think this will be a big challenge for me. So that's in March. I transfer in July. I'm going to England, so the NATO command. And other than that, just enjoying the last remaining years. I'd like to be in the Navy for at least 3 more years. And then beyond that, I'm undecided.
Wow. Well, I love that. Improv class. How fun is that going to be, though?
Oh, my God. It's going to be so much fun.
Something completely so weird.
Oh, yeah. Totally outside my comfort zone.
Totally, but it's going to be so fun.
Right? Yeah. And I think I'll meet amazing people and it'll, you know, I've always wanted to work more on my public speaking. And I thought that that would be a great way to do it. And I'm still getting to a place where I have some of the mechanics of storytelling down, but I do feel like I'm missing some things. So like another thing I need to do is, you know, once I'm out of the Navy, I want to use my GI Bill and go back to school and get like a master's in creative writing. So I'd like to work with academia and do these kinds of things very structurally and see where that leads me. Because I think I'm good, but I think I could be better. So that's some of the things that I think about long-term.
That sounds like so much fun. I love that. So what is one thing you'd like to tell our viewers or listeners right now, if they're struggling with wanting to say something about what they're struggling with, but they don't know where to begin?
I think the best place to begin is to write it out and read it to yourself, and then maybe share it with a smaller group first. So it doesn't have to be all over social media. You might want to join a support group. Mm-hmm. I think that Facebook groups is a really great resource. My friend Molly and I, we started a relationship group when I was going through all my breakups, and that's how we became friends, and has about like 30,000 people on there now. But it's, you know, it's a great resource for people who are struggling in their intimate relationships. And so I think that that's the best thing to do initially, is maybe share your story with people who are like-minded, who might be struggling at the same time. Because I know, like, when I was going through my breakups and I was miserable and in my 30s and everybody was married and doing their own thing, I had to be around people who were going through the same things I was. I couldn't be around quote unquote normal people, because they wouldn't want to hear all my crap. I had to be around people who were also grieving. And I was told even by some people, don't do that, because they're just going to bring you down. I was like, hell no. They're the only ones that understand what's going on right now. And so I think that when you're struggling, it's really important to connect with other people who have the same struggles, and maybe start to share just in very short snippets of your story, and then also get the mechanics of story. There's a lot of books about storytelling, about how to do it. There's story in everything that you do. Every single day, there's a story. Journaling is another way to do that. Start just jotting down certain things. Like, sometimes I'll be out and I'll have an idea for a post, or I'll see something and I can see a picture, and in my mind, a story comes from that picture. I don't know if I bet, because you do a lot of social media too. Like, you just see a picture and then you're like, oh shoot, I got a post coming that's going to match that in it for that video, you know? Yes. But that took years and years, I think, to get to that point. I mean, I've been active on social media since 2010. And so now it's almost like a reflex for me to do that. But every good story, you tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell the story, and then you wrap it up at the end with a point. And so I do little things like that to just make sure that I have some structure to it. Cause it's just like a song. A story is no different than a song or a poem. All those things or a painting, they all have structure. And a lot of people don't sometimes understand that with art, because storytelling is an art, is there's still some mechanics to it. And so you need to have both of those things. You need to have the mechanics and then the creativity to see it and to embrace it and let it come in your life.
No, I love those points. That's really smart, is to join a group first. Try to get their ideas rather than blasting it. Because you're always gonna get someone who's like, why are you saying this?
Oh yeah, the haters. Yeah, they're always gonna come out. No, not at first.
You don't need that.
Absolutely, Annette. And that's why I think I'm so comfortable sharing my story now, is because I did all this in support groups first. Mm-hmm. And then I got all this positive feedback in the support groups. And I was like, well, wait a second, I might be onto something with the way that I share. And so then it just became, all right, I'm going to have to get over my fear of, you know, people and bullying and all this other stuff to do this on a wider scale, because I know that it's resonating and I know that it's helping me, you know, it's healing when you share. And then it's empowering others to do the same. And so that's the baby step, is to surround yourself with a more, I think, receptive audience at first. And then you have the courage to share it with a broader audience.
Right. No, that's so smart. I didn't do that in the beginning because I didn't.
That's why a lot of people don't share. I mean, like, I get all the time public affairs officers who tell me, I keep my Instagram very low. It's just my friends and family. And I get it. I guess I don't want to hate on that. But it's too bad, because they have amazing stories to tell, too. And there are others who would love to know what they do and how they do it and why they do it. But they don't want to do that. And I get it. Some people are just more private than I am as well. So everybody's different. Not everyone's going to want to share the way I share. So, exactly. I get it. But I think that, you know, you start off with a smaller group and then you can build to something bigger.
Absolutely. Oh, such a great, great stuff right here, everybody. So where can people find you to get more words of wisdom from you?
I am active on LinkedIn. My Facebook is okay. I don't mind people joining me there. I'm not, that's mostly for my friends and family, just because that's historically what it's been. But I do have an Instagram as well. My website is Teresa's Tapestries, and I can send you a link after this with, that's got all my links. You know, I have my own version of Linktree, which has, you know, links to all my work and my podcast and everything. And that's where anybody can find me. But LinkedIn, and I would say more even LinkedIn than Instagram. And then I have a YouTube channel, but that's more just to archive my podcasts. And then my husband and I even do a YouTube channel together where we talk about traveling, and it's our couple thing that we do together.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I will share all of that in the show notes after all of this. But for right now, you guys, thank you for being on here, for those that have been watching. And then thank you to those that are listening, all the things. So I'm so glad to be back. I'm so glad that you have been the first guest for the year.
Oh, I'm excited. Thank you, Annette.
Thank you so much. Definitely learned a lot. And I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you for sticking to who you are, because that's not easy to do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.